Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey. Family, welcome to day 358. We are in 2 Chronicles chapters 9 through 12. Really exciting chapters, if you ask me. I enjoyed today's reading thoroughly. And I will admit, I don't always enjoy each day's reading the same. No guilt if you feel the same way. No judgment. But today's reading was action-packed, for real. Like, just narrative moving. And so, if you haven't done the reading, how about you stop the video, pause the audio, go get the reading done, okay? I would not describe today's reading as difficult reading or hard reading. There are a lot of details that you probably may have missed, and I'm going to try to highlight those details because Ezra's slick, yo. Like, Ezra's a little petty. Ezra going to just, like, throw stuff in there, like, you know, just, like, some slick comments here and there. He a little passive-aggressive. Ezra's a little passive-aggressive. Not typically the energy, not the frequency I tune my radio to, but you know, we'll give you a pass, Ezra. A little petty, you know what I'm saying? He's a little 50 cent petty. Anyway, I am going to do my best job to give you context clues, nerdy nuggets, and a timeless truth that I think will help to build and edify your soul and your spirit. So if you haven't done the reading, stop the video, pause the audio for everybody else. Let's dive in. All right, big 30-foot idea for today's reading is that today's reading is a bookended by two Gentile political leaders, okay? Sheba, okay, female, the queen of Sheba, and Shishak, okay, the Egyptian pharaoh. You are supposed to read chapters 9, 10, 11, and 12 together as a unit. Now, it doesn't always work that way, like on the plan. We don't always split it up perfect where there's a chunk of reading that should be read kind of together, but it worked out that way today for day 358. So our reading today is bookended by Sheba and Shishak. Now, what you'll realize is that they are polar opposites. They're engaging with Israel in very, very, very different ways, okay? The queen of Sheba is either from Yemen or Ethiopia. There's all kinds of theories and options for where this woman is from, like who the historical figure would have been. The Egyptian pharaoh, his name is Shishak. This Egyptian pharaoh, actually, there's records of his raids on Judah in Egyptian records, which is really, really cool. It's just always cool when there are archaeological digs in the secular or non-sacred, like biblical world, that back up what's happening in the Bible. This is actually recorded in Egypt on a wall in the Karnak Temple, okay? Karnak Temple, which actually says that this exact pharaoh raided up as far as Phoenicia in many towns of Israel. Also, many place names of Judah are mentioned in the list, which correlate with the history of the raid that we have here. And the big, huge juxtaposition that you're supposed to see is that when Israel prioritized the temple, when they sacrifice and worship and follow the festivals, and they're obedient, they'll be wealthy. And that wealth, or that excellence, remember we said that the book of 2 Chronicles is going from excellence to exile. You're literally seeing that from chapters 9 to 12. The excellence is designed to get the attention of the nations and to cause the nations to come to Israel and need to find out the secret. What's the secret? What makes you guys so successful? Which is then the Queen of Sheba is in awe of Solomon's wisdom, Solomon's wealth, the excellence of Solomon's palace, which then makes her in awe of God. And so that's the ideal. The Israel is supposed to be a blessing to the nations. And we see that in the story of the Queen of Sheba. Then Shishak is the exact opposite, okay? If we go all the way to chapter 12, it literally tells us that Shishak is raised up by God as punishment, okay? It says this, verse 5. This is what the Lord says. You have abandoned me, therefore I now abandon you to Shishak. You've abandoned me, therefore, hey, I'm now going to abandon you to foreign Gentile rulers coming and taking advantage of you. Okay, so you can see just in one, from Solomon to his son Rehoboam. I always have to check, it's Jeroboam that's in the north and Rehoboam that's in the south. So Rehoboam is Solomon's son. And you can see just from one generation to the next, how fast things shift. And Ezra's going to give a sly, low, passive-aggressive reason as to why this shifted, but it's a detail. And you could drive right past it and miss it. You kind of have to read slow and read. You can't read distracted in order to find these details. But all right, from Sheba to Shishak. Okay, that's kind of the 30,000-foot idea. And what's going to happen, the other big thing that's happening is that Israel's going to disappear. Okay, 2 Chronicles chapter 6, verse 5 and 6. So this is back in yesterday's reading. Chapter 6, verses 5 and 6 is going to say this, that obviously that it's David's desire, it's David's plans, it's Solomon who executes it. But Ezra the chronicler wants to make it really, really clear whose choice Jerusalem, David's line, the southern kingdom, whose choice that really is. So chapter 6, verse 5 and 6, it says this, "Since the day I brought my people out of Egypt, I have not chosen a city in any tribe of Israel to have a temple built so that my name might be there, nor have I chosen anyone to be ruler over my people Israel. But now I, Yahweh, I have chosen Jerusalem for my name to be there, and I have chosen David to rule my people Israel." So Ezra's going to make it really clear. God has chosen David as the king, which means his line, which means heirs of his house, and Jerusalem, which means the temple. So that's Yahweh's choice. It's not David's politicking. It's not any political propaganda. This is Yahweh's choice. And if the north is going to rebel against Yahweh's choice, then they cease to be Israel. And we're going to see that. Okay, so let's transition into our nerdy nuggets, and I'll kind of walk us through each chapter. Okay, 2 Chronicles chapter 9, verses 1 through 12, we get the story of the Queen of Sheba. This is the ideal. We've already talked about this at length. And then 2 Chronicles chapter 10, we're going to get the formal split. Now, the content that we're going to find in Chronicles is very different than what we find in Kings. What we find with the prophetic account is once the kingdom splits, there are two big differences, okay? Once the kingdom splits, it's actually going to give blame on both sides. Like this, it takes two to tango. And so there's going to be blame for the north and blame for the south, okay? But not really in Chronicles. In Chronicles, the north is just wrong, okay? You've rejected what God has chosen. God chose David, God chose Jerusalem. And obviously, maybe this is not obvious, Jerusalem is not in the north, okay? And the temple is in Jerusalem. So if Jerusalem is in the south, the temple is in the south, and David's heirs or the kings after David are all in the south, if the north has rejected all of that, then that means they have to create their own temple. They have to create their own Messiah, which then means they are in full-blown religious rebellion. So this is no longer just political. This is completely religious. And in the book of Kings, the ministry of Elijah and Elisha is happening up in the north because the prophetic heart of God is to win his lost sheep back. Okay. That's not just a parable that Jesus tells in the New Testament. That's not like the Father's heart. It's the Father in the Old Testament who's trying to win his lost sheep. Okay. So there's a massive focus in Kings, a prophetic history, of trying to win those 10 lost tribes up in the north. But in Chronicles, nah, Ezra's petty. Ezra is 50 Cent making a Diddy documentary, okay? Ezra is like, nope, we don't care. If y'all have rejected God's choice of David's lineage and the temple and Jerusalem, we don't know y'all. Who this? Like, y'all are cut off, okay? So Israel is going to disappear, okay? As Kings is a prophetic-focused book, the stories of both kingdoms are equally important. Okay, if you remember when we were in Kings, it would be like the Northern Kingdom, Southern Kingdom, Northern Kingdom, Southern Kingdom, Northern Kingdom, Southern Kingdom. It's actually kind of hard to keep track of. Both kingdoms are equally important, okay, if you're telling the story from the prophetic lens or prophetic history. equally important as it is the story of both kingdoms breaking the covenant with Yahweh despite his attempts to draw them back, which is the reason why you get so much space for Elijah and Elisha's ministry, as in those years Israel is further away from Yahweh than Judah. So like the lost sheep parable, okay? Yahweh spends most of his time and energy trying to get Israel back, Israel being the northern kingdom, okay? But Chronicles is not history by a prophet, but history by a priest. Ezra's focus is on the temple, the festivals, the priesthood, and the Levites, Jerusalem, and of course, the one who ties it all together in one place, David. The northern tribes abandoned all these. They rejected the house of David and so rejected the house of Yahweh and the priests, Levites, festivals that are attached to it. And so, of course, they also rejected Jerusalem. In the eyes, therefore, of the chronicler, Ezra, they have ceased to be Israel. They are done being Israel. Okay. Actually, there's a little nerdy nugget in 2 Chronicles chapter 12, verse 1. Rehoboam, Solomon's son, is going to actually lead the southern kingdom of Judah in rebellion. Okay. It says this in chapter 12, verse 1, which is why Shishak is actually going to be allowed to oppress them. Okay. It says this: after Rehoboam's position as king was established, and he had become strong, he and all Israel with him abandoned the law of the Lord. Okay, when the Bible says all Israel here, who is it talking about? It's only talking about Judah. But now for Ezra, the actual nation of Israel in the north is no longer Israel. They have ceased to be Israel. So this idea that there's a true Israel and people who are only ethnically Israel is not only a New Testament idea. Paul is going to run with that idea. Paul is going to run with the idea that to be truly Israel means to be circumcised, not of flesh, but to be circumcised in your heart. It's to accept Jesus as Messiah. It's to walk in the new covenant. That's what it means to be true Israel. So there's already this idea that ethnic Israel is not enough, that it is not just enough to be of one of the 12 tribes, that being a true Israelite means being part of the remnant, okay? And obviously, this is an important idea for Ezra. This is a vitally important idea. Like, Ezra needs this to be an idea, and he needs to find historical grounds and precedent for this idea, okay? So, from this point then, the northern kingdom is not treated as Israel, even if it is named Israel. Doesn't matter if it's named Israel. It's not considered to be Israel. But as a foreign nation, the part they play in the story is a negative one, a threat in the north, just like Assyria. If they reject Yahweh's choice, they reject Yahweh, and so are no longer relevant to the story, and they are excluded. That is it. So whereas Kings is going to go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, once we hit the split in 2 Chronicles chapter 10, that is it. We're not going to hear about the north anymore. And we're definitely not going to hear about the north as if it's like the other half of Israel. No, it's a foreign kingdom. Y'all are not Israel anymore. Israel now is only Judah, because only Judah and Simeon and Benjamin and Levi. So there's actually four tribes in the south. And you're going to see this in 2 Chronicles chapter 11. Okay. All the Levites, chapter 11, verse 14 and 15, all the Levites are going to leave the northern areas. So the north doesn't even have Levites. So anything that they're doing from a religious standpoint is wrong. Like, it's off. This is so relevant during the time of Jesus. Like, fast forward 800, 900 years. Like, the woman in Samaria is the north. She's still kind of like, now, where should we worship? Like, Jews say that the only place to worship is down south, but I don't, like, this debate starts right here. And by the time Jesus is alive, the Samaritan woman is still trying to figure out who's right. All right. In terms of Kings, equal parties bear the blame. Chronicles, this is not 50-50. Nope. It's y'all's fault for leaving. And that is it. That is the perspective of Chronicles. If they reject Yahweh's choice, they reject Yahweh and are no longer relevant to the story, and they will be excluded from this point on. Remember also, the original audience are the Jews who have returned from exile. Okay. Those of Judah and some friends, Judah survived because of their loyalty. Israel was no more because of their rejection. As Ezra is resetting the nation around the Torah, temple, Jerusalem, festivals, etc., once more then, Judah's story is the only one that should be told. Be like these great kings who serve the house of Yahweh, and you will survive and flourish again. That is what Ezra is trying to communicate to his audience. And he is going to shape the content of history to speak to his present audience. Okay, 2 Chronicles chapter 12. Verse 13, I'm going to show you where it gets shady, okay? I'll show you the exact verse because Rehoboam is going to wild out. And Rehoboam wilding out is going to equal that he is just going to be a king that abandoned the law of the Lord, and he's a bad king. That's it. This is so sad, by the way, before I get into how, you know, what the little petty line is in 2 Chronicles 12. It says, when Shishak, king of Egypt, attacked Jerusalem, this is chapter 12, verse 9, he carried off the treasures of the temple. You remember how, like, full of joy David was and how, like, all the work that Solomon put into this temple? And in one generation, it's gone. Literally, just think, like, if Solomon is the one who's writing Ecclesiastes, Solomon literally is writing wisdom. That's like, yeah, you could acquire wealth, but then you have to leave it to your sons, and your son could be an idiot, and your son could squander everything that you got. And that's exactly what's happening. Okay. Treasure the temple of the Lord and the treasures of the royal palace. He took everything. Pharaoh Shishak took everything, including the gold shields Solomon had made. So King Rehoboam made bronze shields to replace them and assigned these to the commanders of the guard on duty at the entrance of the royal palace. He can't afford more gold shields, so he gets bronze ones. That tells you everything you need to know right there. Solomon was a gold-level leader. His son is a bronze-level leader. And man, that is sad. And Ezra, Mr. Petty, is going to give us a reason why. Verse 13, it says this. King Rehoboam established himself firmly in Jerusalem and continued as king. He was 41 years old when he became king, and he reigned 17 years in Jerusalem, the city the Lord had chosen. This is important. The Lord had chosen, not the city that David had chosen. It's the city the Lord had chosen out of all the tribes of Israel in which to put his name. His mother's name was Nama. She was an Ammonite. He did evil because he had not set his heart on seeking the Lord. His mother's name was Naamah, and she was an Ammonite. Ezra is petty. What is Ezra doing in his own time period? He's making men who are married to foreign women divorce those women. So Ezra, who's chronicling the history of the kings of Judah, is essentially saying, David was a great king, Solomon, solid king. But Solomon, he married an Ammonite, had a kid. And these half-bloods, man, his mama probably raised him to be an idol worshiper. And because he wasn't fully devoted to Yahweh, there went the kingdom. That easy. And that's why you shouldn't marry foreign women. That easy. You see how Ezra just sneaks that right in there. Ezra is slick. Okay? So this... so many options on who to blame. I'll actually read this really good because it was in my notes. In this version of Chronicles, the blame for the split is given more to the northern tribes than it is to Solomon and Rehoboam. Though Rehoboam's foolishness is still highlighted, and it'll be the whole point of my Timeless Truth for the day. The emphasis is on the rejection of the north rather than the sin or the folly of the south. The reality is, of course, the split had many causes, some deeply historical ones, going all the way back to Jacob's wives and their children. Solomon was to blame. Rehoboam was to blame. Consequences of the failed conquest was to blame. Consequences of Leah and Rachel's fight over their husband was to blame. Consequences of the way Jacob stole and tricked his way into the birthright and the blessing was to blame. The civil war after Saul's death was to blame. The rebellions against David's rule was to blame. Jeroboam was to blame. The northern tribes were to blame. It is impossible to say who had the greatest blame in such a complex web or weave of consequences that have been going on since the patriarchs. So again, it is not Ezra's intention to simply shift blame or to hide the blame. No, rather he's focusing on one blame that it is most closely associated with the story he's telling. Okay. In the same way, Kings focuses mostly on the choices of Solomon and Rehoboam, not to deny the rest, but when you are telling a story of the way kings react to covenants, then focusing on kings makes sense. But when you're telling a story about a temple, the way that Ezra tells his version makes sense. So the focus is on the northern tribe's rejection of the house of David. And so all that is connected to it. So again, it's not about correct or incorrect. It's about complete. Both accounts, whether it's Kings, aka the prophet's account, or Chronicles, aka the priest's account, are giving different perspectives on the same thing. And the reality is that if I hold this book up, guess what? I can't see what you can see. I'm seeing words, but you're seeing a cover. And now I'm not seeing what you're seeing. And that's what we have with Kings and Chronicles. The prophets are going to see it from their perspective, and the priests are going to see it from their perspective. And thanks be to God that we have both. We get to see both perspectives. All right, our timeless truth for the day, pretty simple. It comes out of 2 Chronicles chapter 10, verses 6 through 11. This is when Rehoboam, Solomon's son, has a choice to make. He can consult elders, and the elders that he consults actually gives him wise counsel. They are right. Hey, your dad took a lot of resources from the north. You should probably lighten up. But instead, he goes to young men and allows young, you know, zealous guys to give him wisdom instead of the old guys. And you know what? Man, I've tried in my life to make sure that I'm incorporating multi-generational wisdom. There are some scenarios where the advice of my peers is great advice. But then there are times where you just got to ask somebody who's in their 70s, in their 80s. Probably, you know, the marriage therapists that have helped me and my wife, Tia, the most, have been married for 50 years. They're in their 80s. And there are some things that my friends, they've given me good counsel on. But some of the best advice I got was from people who don't have the energy anymore, but they got a lot of wisdom. And my timeless truth today is that you should seek wise counsel from some people who have just been around for a long time. I'm not saying that age automatically equals wisdom. However, if you can find someone with age and wisdom, you have found someone that you should really hang on to for dear life. And that's not just true for Rehoboam. That's true for you. That's true for me. It's a timeless truth. Tomorrow, we've got day 359. We're going to be in 2 Chronicles chapters 13 through 16. It's going to be amazing. I can't wait to go through it with you. I'll be right here, same time, same place. Love you. I'm so proud of you. See you tomorrow. Peace. Thank you so much for joining me on the Bible Department podcast. If this episode was helpful, it would mean the world to me if you'd give us a follow, rate and review the show, and don't forget to share. You can learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and find us on Instagram at the Bible Department. If you want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. What if I told you that what you're learning in this video was just the tip of the iceberg? The Bible Department is actually powered by Arma. What is Arma? I'm so glad you asked. Arma is an online subscription-based platform that we designed to help people, everyday people, learn the Bible for themselves. We started Arma so that anybody, anywhere, could have access to trustworthy and entertaining Bible and theology content. In addition to this podcast, we have over 60 courses on individual books of the Bible, on theology topics, and on some hot topics like homosexuality, tithing, and women in ministry. But really, Arma is a community of people that I've gotten to know, a community where thousands of people are currently finding family, asking questions, and nerding out on the Bible together. If you want a community to read the Bible with you this year, or if you want to dive into some deeper theological content, or if you want more exclusive access to me and the entire Arma team, how about you go to thebibledepartment.com. I'll be sure to post the link in the description of this video. Let's make this your year to become a Bible nerd.